Information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
It's 12:37. Mostly sunny skies and light winds were seen across central and southeast Illinois today. Through the morning hours, temperatures around the area at 10 were in the 70s. They range from 70 degrees at Jacksonville to 77 at Olney. A trend toward cooler and less humid weather is expected over the Midwest for the next few days, with high pressure over the Great Lakes in control. Later in the week, warmer and more humid weather will begin to spread back into the region. Scattered storms will again be possible by tomorrow in areas west of the Mississippi River. High temperatures today, they will range from the mid-70s across eastern Wisconsin to near 90 across the Missouri Boot Heel. Low temperatures tonight will range from the mid-50s across eastern Wisconsin to the upper 60s across the Missouri Boot Heel. In Champaign-Urbana today, the high around 82 degrees with sunny skies. A simple forecast for the next few days. Clear skies tonight with a low around 58. Sunny skies expected for tomorrow with a high of 85 degrees. Mostly clear tomorrow night with a low of 65. Friday, mostly sunny skies. The high 88 degrees. Friday night through Tuesday, expect partly cloudy skies. The low around 72 degrees. The high around 90 degrees. Right now, temperatures around the area. We've got 78 in Bloomington. Up in Chicago, 72 degrees, 78 in Danville, or 79 in Danville, 78 in Decatur, 78 down in Effingham. And over in Bloomington, 78 degrees. It's 80 degrees on French Plaza in Urbana at 1239.
Programs on WILL are made possible by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bossert. The Illinois EPA recently renewed the water pollution permit for a coal plant that is known to have violated that same permit more than 600 times.
That logic completely escapes me.
That's water resource scientist Tracy Barkley from the Champaign-based Prairie Rivers Network. And the conclusion to our three-part series, Scott Stuntz explores the thinking behind the EPA's decision.
Barkley is with the Prairie Rivers Network, one of the groups that prompted the state to file its case against Springfield Coal by suing the company themselves.
I think it's really hard to believe that an operator that has not, well, in the last 9 years has complied 1 month out of that entire time, that just because they're given a permit now with a little tighter limits that they're going to comply with that.
The group's lawyer decided to sue after finding Springfield violated its permit for 79 out of the 80 months she examined. So why did the EPA renew the permit?
Now, the key thing here, and this is where I think some of the confusion has arisen, is the Illinois Environmental Protection Act does not establish past noncompliance as a reason for denying a permit. You get that?
This is Andrew Mason, a spokesman for the Illinois EPA. He says the agency actually cannot deny the permit because of the company's past record.
Right. State law, we are not allowed, the agency is not allowed under state law to consider past violations of an applicant in judging, you know, the merits of a permit.
While Mason says the EPA could not deny the permit, he says the agency was able to change it to make it stronger.
There's the sense that there's a rubber stamp, and this is like the farthest you could possibly get from a rubber stamp. It just simply comes down to, we set a high bar for this particular permit, and the operators have committed to meeting it. They feel they can, and we agree, and so by state law, we granted the permit.
Ultimately, it comes down to the idea that the agency isn't allowed to issue a permit unless it can prove that the Environmental Protection Act is going to be met by the permit, and we haven't seen proof by the applicant that it can actually meet the terms of its permit, and so the agency shouldn't have issued it.
That's Jessica Dexter, an attorney for the Environmental Law and Policy Center. She represented the environmental groups, including Barclays, in their case against the coal companies. Dexter says even with the added conditions, she believes the mine won't comply with the new permit. Further, she does not agree with the EPA's underlying reasoning.
I don't agree with that statement because the same statute or the same section of the statute that says the agency has a duty to issue a permit if the applicant can prove that it won't cause a violation of the act, The next sentence says that the agency may consider prior adjudications of noncompliance with the Act, which has been done in this case.
So what does state law actually say? Chapter 415 of the state code, which regulates environmental safety, does say that if an applicant shows it can meet the permit, it must be issued.
It shall be the duty of the agency to issue such a permit upon proof by the applicant that the facility, equipment, vehicle, vessel, or aircraft will not cause a violation of this act or of regulations hereunder.
But it does also give the agency some leeway when looking into past violations.
In making its determinations on permit applications under this section, the agency may consider prior adjudications of noncompliance with this act by the applicant that involved a release of a contaminant into the environment.
In the EPA's renewal of the industry mine permit, in the responsiveness survey section, in which it addresses citizen concerns, it actually quotes this section of the Illinois Code. But the EPA says the code only gives it the power to modify permits based on past violations, not to deny them. Tracy Barkley from the Prairie Rivers Network says the EPA's decision in this case has implications beyond just the industry mine.
That's what's particularly troubling about seeing the state allowing continued operation through the NPDES permit is what kind of message does that send to other operators that you can be out of compliance for 9 years and still be allowed to make money doing what you do and causing damage along the way.
Currently, Springfield Coal is not actively mining at the industry site. However, the owners of the company are trying to open a mine in nearby Littleton, and the coal from that site would be processed at industry. The Illinois Pollution Control Board is scheduled to make a final decision in the penalty phase of the case in August. The environmental groups want Springfield Coal and the previous owner, Freeman United, to be fined $10,000 per violation, the maximum allowed by law. That would add up to about $65 million. In addition, they have announced they will appeal the EPA's renewal of the water pollution permit. I'm Scott Stuntz.
It's 1244. Members of Congress are pushing the Justice Department to preserve flights to small and medium-sized cities from Reagan National Airport. Their support comes amid a review of the proposed merger of U.S. Airways and American Airlines. Changes there could affect flights for lawmakers. And Naylor has more.
If you stand at the right place on Capitol Hill, you can hear the roar of the engines as flights take off and land at Reagan National Airport, a short taxi ride away. It's a standing joke that lawmakers are smelling the jet fumes as they rush out the door at the end of the week, heading for their flights home. So it's easy to be skeptical about the letter signed by over 100 lawmakers from both parties, urging the Justice Department, which is reviewing the merger, to preserve the nonstop flights from Reagan National to small and medium-sized airports across the country. But Democratic Congressman Mike Michaud of Maine, who's heard this before, says it's really not about the lawmakers.
It has nothing to do with lawmakers' convenience and everything to do with representing small communities that rely on these direct flights for economic benefits. This is a bipartisan response to what we have heard from our constituents back home in the district.
Michaud represents Maine's 2nd District and lives about 65 miles from Bangor, which has 3 daily nonstops to the nation's capital. Tony Caruso, director of Bangor International Airport, says those flights are pretty full.
There's quite a bit of travel. It's a good mix of both business and leisure travel. The load factor, which is basically the number of seats sold on those aircraft, they average over 80%. Certainly, we think these flights are critical to the overall health and growth of the Bangor region and Maine economy.
The Justice Department has forced airlines to divest themselves of slots as a condition of approving past mergers. At a Senate hearing on the proposed U.S. Airways-American deal, Douglas Parker, the chairman and CEO of U.S. Airways, warned that smaller cities would lose out if the combined airline has to give up slots at Reagan National.
The slots that will be utilized by the new American are used to provide service to smaller communities, that if other airlines were given those slots, they would not go to similar-sized communities. They'd be flown to larger markets. Okay. I think that'd be bad for consumers.
Parker said the new airline would likely give up its least profitable routes from Reagan National if it had to give up slots, say to places like Bangor, and keep the slots for flights to more populous cities. And the airlines that won the new slots wouldn't necessarily have to fly to the smaller cities either. American Antitrust Institute Director Diana Moss says this points to a problem with airline mergers.
All of these legacy mergers are driving traffic to large hubs at the expense of service to smaller communities. And I think this particular problem at National, which is just one of multiple hubs that are affected by this, I think this is where the rubber meets the road. Can you have a merger of this size with this competitive impact and still be able to fix it?
From long-haul flights to Phoenix, instituted at the urging of Arizona Senator John McCain, to noise and late-night restrictions urged by members of the local Maryland and Virginia delegations, Congress has a long history of involving itself in the workings of its favorite airport. Whether lawmakers can influence the process this time will soon become clear. The Justice Department is thought likely to rule on the proposed airline merger sometime this summer. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home, located at the corner of Elm and University in the historic Trevett Mansion, across from Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Owens Funeral Home, owned and operated by the Owens family since 1925, invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Today, exploring the wilds of New York City.
So we're going to sneak in right over here.
With someone who's working to protect the city's native species by collecting their seeds.
So this is Juncus gerardii, a salt marsh rush.
Seed banking in New York City later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 19th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of the writer Tobias Wolff, born in Birmingham, Alabama, 1945. He joined the Army, served in Vietnam, returned to the United States, and supported himself with odd jobs. Then in 1976, the Atlantic Monthly accepted his story, Smokers. It was the first story he ever submitted for publication. He went on to write several collections of stories, but he's best known for This Boy's Life, a memoir about his childhood. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed by the United States Senate on this date. It's often viewed as the most important United States civil rights legislation since the Reconstruction, and it prohibited discrimination based on race, color, religion, or national origin in employment, voting, and the use of public facilities. First proposed in 1963 by President Kennedy, it failed to pass, but Lyndon Johnson put forward a more robust version the following year. It faced a long battle in Congress, including a 57-day filibuster, but eventually the Senate voted to end the filibuster, and the act was passed with a vote of 71 to 29. And it's the birthday of mathematician, physicist, and theologian Blaise Pascal, born in Clermont-Ferrand, France, in 1623. A child prodigy, by the time he was 19, he had already perfected a mechanical calculator. And in the field of physics, he discovered that air has weight. He conducted experiments to prove that vacuums could exist, and that led him to formulate the same hydraulic principle that is used today in such devices as syringes, automobile brakes, and aircraft controls. In mathematics, he founded the theory of probabilities and developed an early form of calculus. Pascal spent much of his life in conflict between science and religion, and he was one of the first philosophers to seriously question the existence of God. But in 1654, he experienced a revelation, the account of which he carried sewn into his coat lining until his death. He came to the conclusion that there was no science to prove God exists. Instead, humans must rely on their faith. He produced two great works of religious philosophy, Les Provençales and Ponce. Blaise Pascal, who said, "The heart has its reasons, which reason knows nothing of." And here's a poem by Mae Swenson, Distance and a Certain Light. Distance and a certain light makes anything artistic, it doesn't matter what. From an airplane, all that rigid splatter of the Bronx becomes organic, logical as web or beehive. Chunks of decayed cars in junkyards, garbage scows, nimble roaches on the Harlem, herds of stalled manure yellow boxes on twisting reaches of rails are punched clean and sharp as ingots in the ignition of the sun. Rubbish becomes engaging shape. You only have to get a bead on it, the right light filling the corridor of your view. A gob of spit under a microscope, fastidious in structure as a crystal. No contortion without intention, and nothing ugly. In any random, sprawling, decomposing thing is the charming string of its history and what it will be next. A poem by Mae Swenson.